Okay, so last week's Pasha ends, almost ends actually, doesn't really end, but almost ends with the great story of the Akedah when Avraham Avinu passed one of the great tests. We still benefit today from it. When we daven, we talk about it, we tell God to remember us because of the Akedah. We mention it sometimes in our Avraham's chus, his merit, sometimes Yitzhak's merit. It's a major event. Doesn't end the Parsha, by the way. The Parsha then just throws in a minor detail, the last few psukim, that goes through the history then of what the article says, the birth of Rebekah. Rivka's birth happens right after that. So it's the great Akedah, Rivka's birth, and then this week's Parsha begins with Sarah dying, which, go.
Oh, so I was actually funny you mentioned the Akedah, because Rabbi Richmond from the Jerusalem Lights YouTube channel mentioned that there's a Midrash saying that Yitzchak did technically die because,
Zohar.
yeah, he was revived. So that way, every day when we say, I believe in the resurrection of the dead, it's because he technically died and
Excellent.
resurrected.
Excellent. Zohar, correct. That's one approach. Keep that in mind for when I ask the question. That's one of the answers. We're not going on that direction tonight. So it starts out with the Akedah, end of last week. Then we have the birth of Rivka. This week starts Chaya Sarah, which is the birth, which is the death of Sarah, and Avraham Avinu buying a plot. That means it wasn't his. As we have in the Gilyan that we sent out 2 weeks ago, it's a discussion of this even was one of the tests of Abraham, of Avraham. If I would ask everyone in this room, including myself, to name the 10 tests of Avraham, we're not going to go down that road. But just to be fair, it's not even clear what the 10 tests are. Obviously, like many areas in Judaism, when you go through the early commentators, they debate it. They actually debate. I think one of the articles once had a list of the 10. I had two different, I don't remember if I once
A
saw it.
different list, like this Rashi's list.
Right, there is different lists what the 10 are. So let's say we're going to make an obvious mathematical equation. If let's say five different great rabbis have 10 different tests, clearly there's going to be a crossover, some of them automatically. So you can come up with, I'm making number 16 different tests that Avraham Avinu passed, right? That's pretty obvious, right? Because he has these 10 and two others. He has these 10, two others. These 10, two others. So you have altogether 16 tests that he passed. 10 are called, I'm making the words up now, a master test. And the other ones are either subcategories or flowovers or that, consider whatever it's going to be. But you're going to have a major amount of tests. But almost everyone's going to know, not just on the early commentators are going to count it, but all of us are going to know, because the Torah sort of says it, that Avraham Avinu was tested when it came to the Akedah. In the beginning of the Parsha, it begins. First words in 22. Article says the words are, it happened after these days that God tested Abraham. So that's really a universal one. When we talk about davening, God, remember the Akedah. I don't know if there's any davening that says, remember Abraham paid for the plot for Sarah. Not one of the big ones. Remember Abraham was thrown into the kitchen, might be there. But of the 10 plots, the 10 tests that we have, it's interesting that this one is like huge. Till today, it's huge. Okay, we're going with that. That's fine. Just as a basis to understand that this one's a big one. I want to come up with a new approach why it is the biggest of the big. We'll see how it affects us today the most. Now, when you picture things, we've discussed in this class many times. Bodenheim grew up without a television. She has no idea what I'm about to say. But we are influenced by television. We are influenced by our surroundings. So it depends on age. No one in this room, Stephen's on camera, we're not going to say it. But if you're picturing what Moses looked like, it might be Charlton Heston. Something we've discussed. Why? Because you watch, you're influenced by your surroundings, sadly to say. Now, when we picture the Akedah, something we discussed in this class multiple times in the past years, before it was on tape, is that when you're picturing, at one point it says, Isaac asks Abraham, by the way, where's the animal? He says, don't worry about it. And then it says they went together. Rashi's arena, they went together. Yitzchak was fully aware what was going on, and he went. Where I think the original phrase of sheep to the slaughter came from, different conversation. He was headed in that direction to accept upon himself being a sacrifice for Klal Yisrael, which then might have been stolen by another religion. We're not going down that road. The idea is, so when you picture this in your mind, at one point they're walking, they're early on in the game, they're walking toward the mountain, and Yitzhak realizes, no animals around, you got the knife, you got the wood, you're schlepping the wood, where's the animal? Okay. Then the word for the Akedah is bound. Some of you depends on, again, bound would be also, we have no words of Yitzhak here. The assumption is that Yitzhak went in silence. Bound physically, tied up, bound, you bound your mouth. It's like whatever the word is. I don't know how you picture it, maybe you never thought about it until now. But if I would have asked you to picture what was Yitzhak walking, holding hands with his father, he's not a little baby. He's 37 years old, according to some. He's not a little child. He's going up toward the mountain to be slaughtered, and the assumption is they walk in silence. I think that's how a lot of, again, probably from the movies we have, that you have the two people walking in silence. And again, the Torah doesn't relate any words here. What's the question? Bomb question about to have here. when we daven Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we say Slichas, there's a stanza there that says, answer us, God, like you answered. There's a bunch of things. Like you answered when he was in the lion's den. Like you answered Elijah on Mount Carmel. I don't know all the words now, right? And one of them is, like you answered Isaac, Yitzchak, Kishenekad, when he was bound on the altar. Which would mean, I'm not saying it wasn't a silent prayer, but for sure what we pictured until 5 minutes ago, that Yitzchak was walking up silently and going on as a sheep to the game, Yitzchak was davening. And we're saying today, answer us like you answered him. So whatever tefillah you're coming up with, whatever prayer Yitzchak did on the altar, it was accepted. Otherwise, we'd be insane to be saying, accept me like that prayer, and that wasn't
What was
accepted.
he paying for?
So where is this prayer? What is this prayer? Whatever answer you come up with has to be accepted. So again, depends on what you were watching as a child. Was the prayer, get me out of here? I mean, that's defeats part of what we were learning the whole time, right? You're looking up that Yitzhak went up there and he's planning on doing great things, and his prayer was, get me out of here, and he was answered. I think it diminishes the greatness of the whole thing, no?
That's what happened, though. He was gotten out of it.
No, he died out of it. The question was that the prayer.
Worked, it did.
Yes, we have to come up with a prayer that worked. Do we want to say that the prayer Yitzhak said on the altar was, get me out of here? Doesn't the, I think it might, again, I'm wrong, in the first, and people say that, but the first instinct as me would be like, that diminishes the greatness of what he did here. He was dying, he was praying to get out of that situation. He wasn't dying to be there, he was dying not to be there. Play on words. So that's the first question of just a basic thing that we daven. We daven and we say this thing, answer us like Yitzhak was answered on the altar. Let's discuss tonight what Yitzhak was answered on the altar. Okay, so now we said before that after the Akedah, little detail shows up here. You'd figure, remember, we start this week's parasha, Sarah dies because of the news of the Akedah. We end with the Akedah. It was a good segue, but in between we have five psukim in between. The five psukim in between are the birth of Rivka. So really, I mean, we believe every word in the Torah is connected to the exact location. You can't move this somewhere else, or else the whole thing is thrown out the window, right? You need every word in the exact location. So clearly, the Torah put this in between the idea of the great Akedah and the birth of, which is right in the middle of the story, really middle of the story, and the death of Sarah. It must be the birth of Rivka is integral to the story.
Are they Gilgal and one another?
No,
They
good
didn't
choice though.
assess that.
No, good choice though. So one answer is, fascinatingly, this answer is quoted in the 1800s by two rabbis who, I would say, not that they never saw each other. I'm pretty offhand. First instinct would say, never heard of each other. One was a Hasidic Rebbe, Modjeszcz, and one is Reb Yitzchak Volozhin, that is Lithuania, the crown prince of Lithuania. So we're talking a Lithuanian rabbi and a Hasidic rabbi came up with the same brilliant answer. And the answer like this: we know part of the greatness of the Akedah was that Avraham Avinu was told, by the way, you're going to produce through this child Jewry. The Jewish nation's coming through Isaac. Be Yitzchak. It's going to be through Yitzchak. And then he's telling him, slaughter the guy. That's a massive contradiction. And Avraham Avinu didn't ask any questions. And then he gets up there, and the angel says, by the way, you got the word wrong. I didn't say slaughter him. I said, take him up. You took him up. That was your job. Avraham Avinu comes down from the mountain. And these two great rabbis, I would never say this. Not nearly big enough. Thankfully, they say it. Comes down the mountain and he says, you know what happened? Really, I was supposed to slaughter Yitzchak. It's true. But you know why I couldn't slaughter Yitzchak? Because of the first prophecy, he's supposed to have kids. So you know what the failure of me was? Not that God saved him. God was punishing me, Abraham. You didn't do your job right. Because if Yitzchak would have been married and Yitzchak would have had kids, then you would have been worthy enough of passing that test of actually killing him. Now we know now the test was not to kill. But Abraham, they say, was like, wait a second, I gotta marry Yitzchak. I gotta get married and have kids. So in between the story, the Torah puts him by the way. When he came down the mountain, this is what Avram was thinking about. What is going on here? Right away, Rivka is born. We continue the story, Sarah dies. What's the next story after Sarah dies? Finding Yitzchak a spouse to produce the Jewish nation. And Avraham Avinu was thinking, if I would have had grandchildren at this point in time, then you know what would have happened? I would have been worthy of actually fulfilling the prophecy of killing my kid. So I wasn't. That's what they want to say. Unbelievable different way of looking at things. And therefore, it didn't happen. It didn't happen, whatever, because God didn't want it to happen, whatever, that worked out. Now,
Pushing that forward, I can't find that.
that's what, yeah.
It's great, isn't
Yeah.
it? But
Correct,
that's telling
correct.
that this is in order of
Right, but
chronology.
either way, it's correct, but either way, it's, there are definitely Midrashim that say that the greatness was one of the great ideas of all time, brought down Hasidic form as well. That they want to say that when Yitzchak, up until 37 years old, prior to the Akedah, was incapable of having children. And through this slaughter, act of slaughter that didn't occur, but through this spiritual slaughter, he now became a new person, almost what he was saying before. We're not going down that road, but he became a new person that now is capable of having children. And they say the greatest idea of all time. But Musa, this is pure Musa. When you think you have it figured out, and you say, wait a second, if I'm going to slaughter my kid, I'll never have kids. If Avraham Avinu would set himself, wait a second, if I go and slaughter Yitzchak, I was promised to have kids for Yitzchak, it can't happen. But he didn't do it. He went, he was about to do it, didn't ask any questions. Had he been slaughtered his kid, through that act of spiritual slaughter is how he's able to have kids. Without the act of the spiritual slaughter, Yitzchak couldn't have kids. So if he would have told God on the bottom of the mountain, you know what, God, you told me originally, you made a promise. The promise was I'm going to have kids through Yitzchak. I ain't slaughtering him. Then Yitzchak would have remained alive. Avram would have failed that test. Yitzchak would have remained alive, but incapable of having children. But through Avram, not asking any questions, going through the action of spiritually slaughtering him, now Yitzchak became available to have kids. Not available, capable of having kids. And because of his capability, the Jewish nation was created. Which is just a side imbar parentheses idea in Musa. That when you think things are the exact opposite, and if you follow God's word, and you follow the mitzvahs and you follow the Torah, it's going to work out badly for you because I have all my plans. No. When you follow God's words, it creates the plans. It creates a situation where it's able to happen. Now, Yitzchak comes down off the mountain. He's up there. He's not a child. He's 37 years old. Yitzchak is aware that he is the crown prince, that the nation of Judaism is going to come out of him as well. Yitzchak's aware when we're walking up the mountain, by the way, Daddy, where's the, I see knife, I see wood, I don't see the animal. Don't worry. Yitzchak's saying, okay, I know what's gonna happen now. So now Yitzchak gets up there. You know what Yitzchak is davening for? Yitzchak is davening, God, I don't understand this at all. He's like, Avraham Avinu, I don't have any kids yet. I'm not married. You made a promise. This makes no sense whatsoever. You know what I'm davening for, God? Make it work out. I don't care how. I want both prophecies to occur. I want the prophecy of me having children like you promised, and I want the prophecy of you telling Abraham not to slaughter me. Figure out the details. It's not my business. Both should work out. And you know what happens? Both work out. Because Yitzchak becomes spiritually slaughtered. So on some level, the prophecy of slaughter your son is fulfilled, and then he's about to get married and have kids. On an easier level, Yitzchak went blind by the Akedah. The Akedah says, when did Yitzchak go blind? The Rashi says, when he looked up into the heavens and the angels were crying, tears came down and blinded him. We know in Jewish law, someone who's blind is considered dead. Someone who's deaf is not considered dead. Someone got missing a hand is not considered dead. Someone missing a leg is not considered dead. Missing a kidney. Why is someone blind considered dead? Because when Yitzchak created that situation, Yitzchak said to God, listen, I don't know what's going on here. You made a prophecy through me. You're telling my father to kill me. I'm at a loss what to do here. I know what I'm going to do here. I'm going to daven. God, figure it out. Create your own new way. And God said, okay, I'm going to create a new way. I'm going to create the law that blind is dead and you'll physically stay alive and have kids. Which means when we daven, when we're faced between a rock and a hard place, don't daven rock or hard place. Daven, God, figure it out. Third way shows up, something you could never even think of. That's the beauty why we always daven to God. Answer me like you answered Yitzchak. Every year, God, answer me, answer Yitzchak. We're not saying, get me off the altar. What we're saying is, God, create a passage that didn't exist. I can't think of it. I don't even care. Figure it out and make it happen. And it will happen. The power of tefillah is that it creates a way that never existed. On a crude way. Because someone graduated from the army recently. When they went into one of these places, I don't, was it Gaza or 10 years? I don't remember now when I read it. So they said, we can't, the doors in the houses in these Arab neighborhoods were booby traps. If they go through the door, so what did they do? They came with a tank and knocked the whole wall down, the side wall. That means the Arabs never thought that, by the way, we should booby trap the wall. No, they're not coming through the wall, they come through the doors or the windows. came through a wall on the side. I once read this somewhere that the Israeli army at one of the wars did this. Now the Arabs adjusted, but they did this at one point. But the idea is thinking outside the box, way outside the box. You know who can think outside the box? God can think outside the box. Because otherwise, why is a guy missing a nose not considered a dead guy? I don't know. Because no one davened for that. God said, you're doubting for a way out of it, I'm going to get your way out of it. Either we're saying through blindness or through spiritual death. When we go and daven, we have to understand the power of our tefillah. When we daven, we're creating a brand new pathway that didn't exist, which means something I've said in the class many times, by the way. Rav Shlomo Zalman, they all say this. When you're davening for something, don't be specific. Don't say, God, let me be successful in this meeting. The moment you're diminishing God's infinite power, when you're telling God, hey, I have a roadmap, God, here's what I want. I want to get married by this, have a kid by this, make money like this. No. Don't do that. Be vague, because God creates new pathways. We said before that only one person didn't go over to television, even though they probably do. We said before you're being influenced by television you watch. We're all influenced. You know what the biggest proof is? The greatest outside-the-box thinkers in the world are people who think that they have the science fiction guys. They come up with crazy ideas, a brand new world, what the Harry Potter, I never read. Brand new world that doesn't exist. All of the things, I never read it, so I can't promise on this next line, but I know I'm right. All of the science fiction concepts that exist are all based on concepts that we have now. It's a bionic eye. Instead of a guy seeing like I see, he could see through a wall and then 100 miles, whatever it is. He's not coming up with a sixth sense, a seventh sense. Why not? Because we're limited in what we can think about. We think outside the box. We don't realize we're inside the box. We are inside the box. The only way to get out of the box is through prayer. Prayer makes it a situation where you're now no longer confined by the box. People will say, I don't understand. Does God have ultimate knowledge? Do we have free choice? One of the most, the Rambam in Perek Daled, the fourth chapter of repentance, talks about it. And he gives vague terminology. And the basic approach that people want to say is, when you're in this world, you can't understand what it's like outside of time, outside of knowledge, whatever it means. We're not going into philosophy right now. The idea is when we're supposed to be praying for something, when you're supposed to be davening for something, it has to be realizing that it's starting a brand new methodology. A brand new methodology. Nothing to discuss that existed before. And when you're davening, you're showing God what? I know, God, you can create a brand new methodology. You have the power. I don't want to know it. You worry about the details, God. I just tell you like this. Let me die for the sacrifice for Klal Yisrael and let me have children. In our world, that doesn't exist. In God's world, it exists. Repentance exists in God's world. I punched you. Did you? I embarrassed you. Did you one time this year? Maybe one time. Maybe one time today.
Embarrassed? More than once.
More than once. Right? So I'm saying, so now I say, I say, forgive me, and you're a good guy, you just have to forgive you. But I did embarrass you, what happens? In God's world, there's now a new world created where I didn't embarrass you, whatever it means. I didn't embarrass you, you don't care, the whole thing works out. Because we're going outside the box. The reason we discuss this test for eternity, and the reason why we pray for this test for eternity, is because this test is necessary. You know why? Because, do you know the nickname for Elijah the prophet? Elio Anavi comes and Mashiach comes. What's his nickname? I thought you're nodding, yes. One of his nicknames is, in the Gemara, what does it say? Teiku, right? When the Gemara ends with a question, the Gemara has a very serious question. Gemara ends with a terminology called Teiku. Tof, Yud, Kuf, Vav. It comes up in Gemara. Teiku means it's an endless question. Okay. Sometimes it says Sheila. Sometimes it says Kusha. Sometimes it says Teiku. Teiku is an acronym. It also means question. It's an acronym that means that Elio Anavi should come and answer the questions. That means when we daven for Mashiach, one of the things we are davening for is that Elio Anavi is going to come and answer all the questions. Yes, he's going to answer if I have a green oven that I cooked food on and I found an argument between the Beis Yosef and the Ramah. Yeah, he's going to answer this question. Yeah. You know what else he's going to answer? All of our questions. All of our questions on life. But what happens? We all have questions. We all have basic questions. Holocaust. Go through all the questions we all have, right? When Eliyahu comes, Mashiach reveals himself. He's going to answer these questions. And usually, what is Mashiach going to look like? Is Mashiach going to be a regular system that the non-Jews will love the Jews? Not what he's going to look like. What will the world look like? What will the world look like? What will it, yeah, it's funny. I don't want to give him that credence on camera of doing it. But now that you said it, that's it. Now that you're on camera saying it, hopefully we'll cut it out, but yes. But the idea is, when how is Mashiach going to look is also a question. The Rambam says that at certain points will be just like this world today. Some say there'll be a different type of world. All types of questions. The way to get to that world, how do you get to the world that doesn't exist today? The third passage, the outside the box world, through davening. You know we daven for Mashiach? Because the davening is the only way to get to a Mashiach, through davening. It's the only way to do it. Because that has to come up with saying I'm going to have contradictions in front of me, and it's still going to work out. We don't understand how it works out, the contradictions. That famous story, they say, the Ramban, Nachmanides, 1200s, had a student. And the student was about to pass away. And Nachmanides gave him what they call a cameo. What's a cameo in English? Amulet? No, amulet. Amulet with an A, right? Amulet. Come listen to me. I know who I am in this world. Great rabbis know who they are in this world. They're not naive. Here's the amulet, my signature. Wherever your soul goes, wave this. You gotta. It's an easy pass. You're going right through. Don't worry about it. You go straight to God. You ask him all the questions you have. It's not a problem. But on one condition. My amulet, you got to come back with the amulet, use it in reverse, and come into me a dream and tell me, because I have certain questions. The guy passes away. A couple days later, he comes to the Ramban in a dream. Legendary story. Comes to the Ramban in a dream. And the Ramban says, what's going on? He says, Rabbi, you're good. You are good. That amulet is literally, it's the pass. Anytime I was being stopped by all types of angels, take it out. Oh, Rabbi Moshe Ben Nachman sent me. Move out of the way. Send them through. Send them through. I'm going further and further. I'm entering different gates. And I have my questions. I'm ready to fight for you. Ready to fight for you. He said, I got to a certain room. And all the questions were answered. And I realized I can't even ask the question. It's embarrassing for me to tell the angels in that room, my rabbi had this question. Can't do it. It would have embarrassed you. You don't even understand. We're looking at a world from this world, and we have contradictions and questions and all that. In that world, it makes perfect sense that it's embarrassing to ask the question. It's a world we're changing now. Not that, let's say, you fall down, God, someone falls down, God forbid, goes to the hospital, broken leg, they find out that the falling down saved them because they now found he had a certain disease that had to heal. That's the fall down was good. That's one level of greatness. Someone falls down, it's a bad event. They fall down, terrible, they break their leg. Yes, and now they go to the hospital, it turns out well. I'm not saying that. I'm saying let's live with the contradictions. That the contradictions have a new way to do it. The Mashiach Eliyahu is going to come and tell us A means A and B means B. And guess what? It still makes sense. What does it mean? It's A and B. How do we have God's foreknowledge and our free will? At a certain point, we'll get there. So the idea is Yitzhak was sitting on an altar and he's davening to God. What is he davening? Doesn't say. According to this approach, you know what he's davening? It should all be good. Not good, meaning every prophecy you said fulfilled. How? Not my business. He had a prophecy that says he was going to have children and a prophecy that his father was supposed to kill him right then before he had children. Well, that's a contradiction. You can't have the children if your father's killing before you have the children. His answer was, in it, God, figure it out. I don't know. New methodology.
He was supposed to have, was he ever
I'm
told
going,
God
right. I'm going with this guy that he was the crown.
before?
Right. So I said it before, that we're going with the attitude that he knew he was crown prince. Yishmael was thrown out, right? His brother was half brother was thrown out.
By that time, he was gone. Although
He came
he
back, maybe.
had
That's a big question. We never got into
three
that.
children.
We're not going into that. Correct. But the basic assumption was Yishmael was sent away, and why? Because he was going to affect Yitzchak. Yitzchak was the crown prince. It took them 100 years to have him.
Worth
But this idea,
on
the
average.
alternative universe, we never get to see. Now. We can't, depends on your personality of how bad you think it can be. Now, again, what I'm saying is easier to say than to live. You need to be a kiva when the candle goes out in the story in Brachas to say, you know what, this is also good. My animals ran away, this is also good. And then he realized why it's good. But it's not, the goal in life is not, this is very important. The goal in life is difficult to get there. It's not to say, oh, look, it was good, I was right. The goal is to right then believe it's good. But it's a level that we have to work on. The work on the emunah and the belief that yes, everything's good. It's a different level than I'm saying now. I'm discussing prayer
Oh,
and
so
creating new
this is
contradictions
the best
and
way to create
new
new
paths.
ones.
It's funny, someone asked me recently, and a very, very impressive person, he asked me recently this question. He said, post-Holocaust, many people went off the path that they were raised on. They were raised in the shtetl, not everyone was, but the people who were raised a certain way. Post-Holocaust came out, and again, as we've said many, many times from the Satmar Rebbe and others, you can't question these people, what they went through. Why is it that a Holocaust, post-Holocaust created negative results, if we can use such a phrase, while post-October 7th, definitely don't want to use this phrase positive results because that sounds, crass. You know what I'm saying? Many of the hostages that came out, many of the families became a little bit more religious. Okay, now, and I don't even know if this is true. This is what the people are telling me. They're telling me that post-Holocaust, there was a massive moving away from God movement. And post-October 7th, there is a coming closer to God movement. A rabbi asked me this. I mean, a rabbi called me up the other day and he asked me this question. He said, think of an answer. So on the spot, we were like negotiating of different potential approaches to come up with.
It's just so extreme.
But in philosophy, we don't believe that one death is worse than 1,000 deaths. If you go to a philosopher and say, how did the Holocaust happen? Did you have a problem with the doctrine, one baby dying? That's philosophy 101, that you don't say the magnitude of it can be. I think you might be right, though. I'm just saying in philosophy. This rabbi told me this answer. I love this answer. And it ties into tonight. And if this is good, Charles, you leave him in. Charles, he's my decider also. That in the end, during the Holocaust, for whatever reasons, many of Jewry, based on society at the time, were unaware of what was going on. In Hungary, I don't know how far that is, a couple hundred miles away, they were not aware. One of the things the Nazis did very well, sadly to say, was hide what was going on. Of course, Churchill knew and Roosevelt knew that they're going to burn for that forever. But the average Jew didn't know about it. The Chazon Ish famously said, I was completely unaware, not pretending that he had prophecy. And he once said, they claim this, I don't know, that had he known, he would have died. And maybe he could have done something. That means prayer was removed from the situation on some level. Of course, the people in Poland were praying, obviously. But the people outside of it were unaware what was going on a certain level, completely unaware what was going on. Even a short way away, when the Auschwitz two guys snuck out and went to Poland and went to Hungary, and they were telling them, but nobody believed them. They thought they were crazy people. When the guy was saying they're gassing Jews, they were like, the guy's nuts. He had a breakdown. October 7th, I didn't watch that 45-minute, whatever that's, it was, I don't remember if it was 45 minutes, something like 45-minute Israeli version, did not watch it. But I know what happened. And everyone knew what happened. And when it's happening, and all of Judaism gets together, and all of Judaism davens, the result is massive. To even have someone who is not involved, not aware of it, becoming more involved. That means not to take away your greatness. But the idea of the nation, of the power of prayer. So I want to say, to tie it in tonight to this other one, I'm telling you from Isaac and Abraham, the power of prayer works to create something we never thought of in our life. Outside the box, past science fiction. We can't think about it. Guess what? In the power of prayer, someone who dies is going to have kids. How? We'll figure it out. A blind guy becomes dead. Why? I don't know, because that's the new power of prayer. When Mashiach comes, we're going to answer things that make no sense. The contradictions will exist. The contradictions will exist. And even with the contradictions existing, the prayer works. And you know what else prayer does? When everyone prays, it creates a world with people, the atmosphere is breathing it. And everyone starts getting closer to God. Everyone starts getting closer to God, and guess what? Closer to Messianic revelation. Not everyone understands the power of our prayer. We don't understand that we could create a brand new world. That's what Mashiach is. We're going to pray like Isaac created a brand new world, that now blind people are considered dead, and therefore he's alive. We could create the Messianic revelation, which will be a brand new world. With the prayers, with the proper prayers, we have the power to do anything. And we see it, because when the whole world, Jewish world, was praying on October 7th and post, and maybe even till today, but definitely as long as the hostages were there, that prayer has the effect that people are becoming closer. And maybe God wasn't ready during the Holocaust to have the whole world pray, to end it in a certain way, which we'll get to the answer when Mashiach comes. That will be one of the contradictions that will be answered. So we have to know now that God gave us the ability, that we all know what's going on, we all have the power to pray. We're creating people becoming repentant. And hopefully the second part of this prayer happens and we get the revelation to answer all the contradictions.